You're listening to Esprit Radio.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
That's right. Welcome to our neighborhood. Welcome to Black on Black Crime, our point counterpoint program where we talk issues, news. Sometimes we play a game or two, but we don't do crime. If you're not familiar with our program, Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. You can join in on today's topic by calling in or sending your comments in the chat room. With that being said, on with the show.
Welcome again to Black on Black Crime. On this show, we have a special program. We don't really have any Black on Black Crime stuff per se, just because we want to make sure we just talk some current events and some things that's going on in the world. So we're going to talk about that Floyd Mayweather beating Pacquiao. Beat him in Vegas, unanimous. We're going to talk about that. And our main topic is the Freddie Gray killing. We're going to talk about, Baltimore lift their curfew, so Finesse is here, and we're going to talk about that. We do have some entertainment news, but we're not going to even start off with that. We're going to start the show directly by bringing Finesse in. What's going on, Finesse?
I am walking the street because we don't have curfew. It's been so long, I forgot what freedom was really about.
It's like, wait a minute, it's dark outside that I can actually look out the window.
I can actually look, 10 o'clock. That sound like when my mama, Ozzie Dimps, used to have me on lockdown. You better be in this house by 10.
Oh, did you forget something at the store? It's like, I can't rent out. Oh, man. You done.
Man, listen. You know what? It was so, I understood. Don't get me wrong. I would have preferred 11 o'clock. But it was like that. It was like, yo,
let me see
what
I got at
10 o'clock. Yeah, so it was real crazy because you're running around at 7, 8 o'clock trying to get stuff. It was like Christmas Eve. People was running around trying to do everything before Christmas Eve. And I saw a really funny joke.
And
a comedian posted
early.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they were closing at 9, 10 o'clock.
Oh,
7.
God.
It was crazy. But here was the funniest thing, because I was already thinking it. I was like, yo, you got a girl. You got a girl on the side? You got to choose who house you staying at that night.
Yeah, you can't say I was running late.
Caught. Right. He'll be texting you where you
at. The problem
so
I don't have.
Was, a lot of side chicks was probably upset their main hustle wasn't there with them. He was with his main one.
I didn't even think about that. We should have did a public service announcement kind of program. Food, water. Mm-hmm. Some extra, like Benadryl. You want some, side chick. Now, you want to get her to your closest friend's house? I'm just joking. Glad the commission out here, right?
Woo! But it's the truth. Like, I saw a joke today. A lot of you man girls mad right now because your man was coming home every night at 10 o'clock. Now he ain't coming home back again until after 2.
All right, well, tune in on the Black on Black Crime. We're about to get the plug pulled. But thank you. Thank you. Good night.
A lot of girls calling for the curfew in Baltimore.
Oh, man,
you put the curfew back on?
or either to lift the curfew because, ain't nobody here. Here's the excuse, maybe they was working third shift. Maybe they was working late. Curfew
nah, because you had to have a slip saying that you was working. They was not playing.
Oh,
taxis.
Really? Oh.
I think the buses were just running to be running.
They were saying just in case somebody get caught out, you couldn't get off at the bus stop.
What?
You just like keep going.
Because you did have people that was working. People was working third shift. They ain't ride home. But taxis is out of luck.
Man. All right. That had to be trauma in the middle of curfew.
It was trauma for me because I wanted to go outside and sip a glass of wine, maybe smoke a little cigar. I got to be in the crib. Felt like probation all over again.
All right, on that note, welcome on to the show. We're a little giddy before we get started, apparently, because
I got to take a test, too.
Yeah, all right, listen, Listen, because since we're free from the curfew, it's like everybody was on lockdown. Here's the thing about the curfew that kind of got me. As I watched, like, the news coverage of it, they act as if bringing all those police officers stop people from tearing up. And the truth is, it is black people to kind of stop black people from tearing up. Like, you have to really have cooperation for that as well.
Well, I don't think – I'm going to be clear when I say this. And I've been to a couple closed-door sessions. Just met with the guardian angels trying to figure out why they weren't called to be part of the solution. And I don't think they were ready. I think the first night they was like, yeah, right. The Angle really had no curfew. When 101 people were arrested, that sent a signal. Either some of y'all was going to stand because y'all still had warrants and going to jail put you through the system, or you didn't want to go to jail. So people were off the streets. You had some demonstrators that were just trying to prove a point,
right?
And they went. But for the most part, after that first night and those first arrests, it was quiet around here.
Right,
quiet.
But it was
now,
after the first night that they brought all the other folks in, right? It wasn't the very
first
night, one, but then they.
I'm talking about the very first one, not that first night.
Okay.
But they basically had it under control by then. I mean, because we had only tore up what we wanted in our neighborhood. And I have to admit, Mr. Elijah Cummings and Catherine Pugh have to give them credit. They were there saying, yo, this ain't the way to be. We tearing up our stuff. We don't need that. And that helped. But when they brought in the other guys, and they tested it, you know, like it's a kid. You tell the kid, don't you come out that room. Don't you get out that bed. And they're going to see if they're really going to do something. So it was that case. 101 people were locked up. They was like, yeah, I think I'm going to stay in the house.
Well, nobody likes to get locked up. I think the moral of that story is that it's not like, you know, people paint the picture that people enjoy getting locked up. I don't think it's that. It is hard for those people who already have their freedom to be restrained. Like, I hate being searched. Now, I've never been arrested, so I don't like it. Like, it's not like when I go to a football or basketball game and they're like, could you raise your hands up? I'm like, no. Right? I can understand where that mentality comes from, where people don't like to be restrained. Anytime somebody does something, I was always of the mindset that police get paid to do a doggone job, and you profiling me is not your job, because now you're wasting time with me when you should be going after somebody who actually did something. So they
That's absolutely true. It's not all police officers. You and I both know folks who are police officers in the various locations we live. But when you have corruptness on all sides, from the political side, religious side, to the police side, no one's safe.
Right.
So I get it. Situation wasn't handled well by anybody. And I want to say this while I have a chance. You know, I pray for the families of those police officers that were arrested, because a lot of people are saying so many nasty things about the officers and forgetting you got to have compassion, because that family is going through it as well. Their kids are going through it as well. And, you know, you got to have some compassion for at least that end, and be careful what you say, because nothing has been proven yet. All you did was get an indictment. Let's let the process play out.
And at the same time, but I can just say from the other end of that, it is hopeful. You know, people are hopeful because at least somebody took a step instead of giving police officers immunity every time somebody dies. Right?
Right.
So
that is true.
I'm never the person that's saying, yeah, trust the system and see how it works, because I know how corrupt it is. And the problem is that nobody's ever taken action. So when it comes down to it, matter of fact, I have to tell you this. I did listen to a statement that the Baltimore Orioles chief operating officer said. Now, not the owner, but the owner's son. When he was asked about this, he said, you reported this on the last show about him saying that the politics, this is a top-down problem. You realize it's Congress not funding money. It is a part of the unemployment issue. There's a lot of issues around why some of the communities have a lot of frustration. But under no circumstances is there a good reason for a policeman that you're supposed to turn to for safety that you should be worried about them killing you. We need to deal with it from that respect. One of the reporters asked him, what message did he have for young black youth? Did you see that?
I do, but I forgot what he responded.
Okay.
And I was trying to listen to that and doing 80 million things at the same time.
Here was his response. I'm not a young black youth and never been one. He wouldn't make a statement. And I have a lot of respect for him now. I have respect for him when you reported what he said the first time, but at least somebody's mm-hmm. getting this, right? They're trying to make
right.
him make villains of black youth, and he was saying it is a part of the problem is systemic. The corruption in politics, systemic. The school funding, systemic. The issues of policing, systemic. Like, you need to deal with this. And so it is, like I said, I have a lot of respect for him and the CEO of Starbucks, just from him saying we're building a Starbucks in Ferguson and saying, look, we need to deal with this. And he wasn't talking to, you know, those communities that everybody's pointing a finger at. He was talking to the community that he comes from. We need to deal
right.
with this. So,
right.
you know, I didn't know if you saw him speak or anything, but I have a lot of respect for him and for what he's done or what he said.
You know, it's so funny because I caught that article early in the morning when I reported on it, put it on Facebook, and then we talked about it in the evening. And there were a few black people who were, like, bugging because he made comments. And my thing is, why are you bugging? This dude actually took your side.
Exactly. But he didn't even take
your
side that he empathized with you. He empathized with the whole situation. He's saying that on our end, it's our responsibility of why there's only one, you know, drugstore down there. It's our responsibility and why we're not hiring and why we don't look to fix all of our communities. It's a political pressure
right.
issue. And at least he had, you know, put it on himself as a owner to say we need to do something about the community that my ball club is located in. At least somebody's
right.
doing
that. And you know what? He didn't have to.
Sure didn't, because nobody
point.
Else has
you
done it.
You don't understand. He spoke up. He wrote that beautiful article. And he said, well, look, it's not on them, it's on us. So what are we going to do?
Right.
And the background on his father is, his father used to be big time and making sure that people got, you know, people was for the working man, let me put it that way. And then when he gets the money, the biggest criticism was he forgot where he came from, because that's where he came from. But to
right.
see his son say, you know, my dad takes a stance on this, but I'm going to take a stance on it this way.
Right.
That's really good. You know,
right.
And people don't need to be mad. And, you know, I think sometimes we as black people, we forget. We weren't the only ones going through a struggle. There was those people that helped us along the way. And you have to remember that, and you have to make sure you tell the truth on that.
No doubt of people of good conscience, but, you know, a part of the problem is we always mix problems, right? So, and starting
right.
with this police killing, we start kind of self-inflecting, which is the nature of black-on-black crime as a show to begin with. It is overtly focusing on ourselves. So every time something happens
right.
to us, we start feeding on ourselves. Well, what about the schools, and what about watching your own kid? And, you know, like the spectacle of the woman who was beating on her kid, right?
Right.
Now, it's not that I disagree with her, because I can tell you there's been many days I was in the park way too late, and I see that car pull up, and I'm like, yo, man, somebody take my spot. I got to go. But your parents, black people did that for eons. And we don't look at each other any kind of crazy because of it, because, you know, there's times you stand on the corner, somebody parent pull up, and they run towards the car and say, I see you, right? We didn't trip off.
Hey,
up,
man, remember Nowhere City? You wasn't getting to Nowhere City not unless a parent was dropping you off and a parent was picking you up. Don't let them
hey.
Find out you lied.
Right, right. And so I'm saying, okay, so say they found out you lied and they actually came in the club and said, I'm looking for, oh, daddy, better go and just take them and snatch them out the club. That was no
hey,
big.
I've seen it.
Right. That was no big honor to start going on The View and making some world tour about caring for your child. And I have an
right.
issue with all of them hyping her up like she should be the parent of the year, because I have much respect for her. She loves her child, but you have to listen to what she said. She said, that is my only child, and I don't want him to get killed like Freddie Gray. Her only son,
and
right? So she didn't want him to get killed. So it was still an indictment against the police officers because he's saying they're going to kill you, and I'm not going to let that
right.
happen. It wasn't
right.
because
and
he was some delinquent. It wasn't the other way around.
Right. And I think that's what we miss. I mean, when we let the court
we miss that big.
Decide, when we let a court decide how we're going to raise our kids, you actually mm-hmm. took the power out of the household and let these – now, and don't get me wrong, there's not – there's you know, you shouldn't spank your child for everything. But I was one of those kids that needed that ass whooping. I'm going to be perfectly honest. I was one of those kids that needed that, and I'm glad my mama did that. So,
right. So
she when she did that, you're right. It was a reaction of you're gonna be killed out here. These cops is open season on black people. She had every right. What's funny is Fox News and all these folks were applauding her,
and then the people
who are against child abuse are like, oh my god, they're actually thinking about trying to bring charges on this woman.
No doubt. And see, here's my problem with the whole concept of her parading herself on The View and all these other things, is what happens is that the police has now seen his face. And what happens is that he's going to live in that community, and when he's targeted out and they beat him down, they're going to say, see, this is the same kid that they tried to bring off the street. She unfairly held her child out as a poster child. She unintendedly did that. But that was not smart.
Right.
So black folks, stop turning your kids in, because technically you can discipline them, but that system has a way of like self-correcting itself, and they're going to try to default back to how they always been.
And listen, it always comes back around. It always comes back around. No matter if you've been out of the system, you try to get out of the system, they always come back around because you're in the system. Once you're in the system, you can't get out. No matter, I don't care if you run for the president of the United States. They're always going to try to find some way, because they don't – their job is to not solve crimes. Their job is to get somebody arrested, whether they're guilty
or not. Now, I'm worried about that kid's safety. That was my thing. Like, once he started getting plastered all over the place, his safety is in a bad spot, and it's not even from people in the community. You know what I mean?
A couple of good things came out. Some men have stepped up to help mentor him because they see the good. And I think that's beautiful. And
well, nobody said
he was
a bad kid, though.
No, he's not. But that's still a beautiful thing that people say, you know what, let me reach out. Because they could have just not ignored it. So that was good to see. And also, I was at a meeting today talking about what's the steps on healing Baltimore. And Senator Barbara Mikulski was there, and she brought her up. And she said, and she basically said the same thing you said. She said, we shouldn't be praising her for doing the job she was allowed to do and was supposed to do, and that's care for the safety of her son. Now let's try to find this woman a job so that she can move out of wherever she's living so that she can raise up her family in the right conditions. I thought that was beautiful because she didn't have to say that. She didn't have to say that at all, and she did. So people are noticing on different levels. I agree with you. I don't – and she probably wasn't thinking about it. She's not in it. She don't understand. But she's very well-spoken. Handled the situation correctly, went on these news stations because everyone's trying to exploit her and her kid all to talk about Baltimore. And she did it well. She wouldn't let them make statements against Baltimore, comment on the Freddie Gray situation. I'm here to talk about my son. That's it. I can't answer for nobody else. I'm talking about my son. This is my only son. And I'm going to make sure that he stays here, whether he likes it or not.
Right.
And
now,
that's where the focus of the story should be.
She's going to be used as a poster child against you as a community. And I think,
you
know, one of the things that kid said when he was on The View, I know that people are playing this clip, but he said that he had friends that was killed and beaten mm-hmm. by the police, and he was frustrated mm-hmm. because he has no outlet for that. So if you would have heard him correctly opposed to talking at that kid, here's what he said. We are reacting because you grown folks aren't doing your job. That's why these kids are acting like that.
Yeah.
You
and it's a lot
job.
Of kids. I've talked to a lot of kids, and they said that's the one thing that adults don't listen to them, especially their parents, and they have no outlets. And then the other half of the kids said, you know, we get marching, but to loot, and that's what I have a problem with, those kids that just looted to be there, because there was kids that wasn't there for that purpose. They weren't there for marching for their rights. They were there, we could do whatever, and that's a whole other story. And that's what the media just wanted to concentrate on. They wanted to concentrate on the looting and make it like that was a that was a problem. Well, look, I live in a predominantly mixed area like Syracuse University, and there were stores in place that was vandal down here, but the media never reported. Only thing they reported on was Penn North and North Avenue. That wasn't
right.
The only place the places were hit. There were more places than that, and when you do that, you are responsible for helping breed the negative attitude when it comes to minorities, because you're not listening to the other voices in the community and hear what they have to say. We're all in it together. But, you know, media and some of these so-called wannabe religious leaders and political leaders and civic officers, they're concerned about lining of their pockets and protecting their area, and they could really care less. And that's just
right.
Sad when the media adds on top of that.
Again, we need to see the bigger picture. And I am glad, you know, as I watch the news coverage, that the brothers and sisters, like, just in their 30s area, those guys are so much farther advanced than the folks I think that are, you know, plus 50. And here's the reason why, is that during the time for the people who are in between their 40s and 50s, what happens is that we always kind of got watered down when something happened and said, y'all need to sit down and talk and we need to work this out. Now, John Lewis is an elder. We don't mess with elders.
Mm-hmm.
So when he says sit down and be quiet, just sit down and be quiet, right? Got to listen to your elders.
Right.
But at the same time, I guarantee you, just in the bigger picture, black people wouldn't work at McDonald's. There would be no black firefighters. There'll be no black policemen. There will be no black people in corporate if white folks can just give you services and tell you sit down and shut up. A part of the problem is that they are scared, even, you know, in corporate, and we know this in the music business, if Eminem and Iggy Azalea, and I shouldn't use Eminem because I like him, but if Iggy Azalea and some other white rapper could knock Jay-Z and those guys out the blocks, you wouldn't have no more black rappers if black people listened to them.
Well, if they had
that's
a new
no...
with this new collaboration between Britney Spears and Iggy, Izzy, whatever you want to call it.
yes.
That speaks to your point, because that's what they're trying to do. Is
yeah.
Because there's no way anybody is interested in freaking Britney Spears.
Right, but
they're trying
about
to force that on us.
Yes, and you remember Jimmy Jam or Terry Lewis, those guys had that black music, they were trying to form a union because all of these major corporations was getting rid of their black music departments because they said, oh, we don't need that no more because it's all just music. So you know what
right.
they'll do is they'll just weed us all out. So I think that people don't
right.
never get the understanding of this because we think it's either Malcolm or Martin, like there's not no combination of both. But I like
right.
remind people, there's a very famous picture of Coretta Scott King. When Martin Luther King got arrested in Selma, the people who came down there was Malcolm X or
and
L.
Betty.
Hodge, Malik al-Shabazz. It's a picture of him and some community leaders. It wasn't the people who you were sitting around talking about, we are for nonviolence, so you want to sit in and we got a nice suit and we need to show these white folks that we're not going to fight back. The people who came down to protect Coretta was not playing.
Mm-hmm.
So while he was locked
right.
up, it was Malcolm and those guys who came down there. I like to remind
right.
people of that because they think that they were always on opposite ends. So
no, they weren't.
And
there's a couple of pictures of them together and a couple of with Betty and Coretta together.
Yes, right? When we think about it, white folks look at it in the situation where these black kids are sitting at the lunch counter and they're pouring flour on them and pouring all this stuff on them and throwing stuff and throwing eggs, and they're like, they didn't fight back. That's not these kids, right? So when I watched some of the, what was it, the footage from the protesters walking past some of the sports bars, I don't know where it was, but when they were walking past the sports bars and some of the drunk folks was yelling the N-word at them, and this guy steps out from behind the barricade and starts to fight somebody and black folks beat him down, I don't feel sorry for that white dude. He was drunk, and
yeah.
he felt like he could say anything that he wanted to him. So we need to be conscious of that because people are not going to take that like they used to.
Right, and there was instances of that the week prior to the that Saturday when they had to keep the Oreo fans inside. I got the other half of the story because what you heard on the news, they were walking by restaurants and just throwing stuff. And when you talk to the people that were in it, it was like, look, Finesse, this was the deal. We walked by here. And they were calling names. They was drunk. No one called us the N-word, but they were calling us.
No,
all
they had some
names.
Footage,
and,
though.
You know,
they had some footage of that. I saw that part.
And
of them calling them the N-word.
See, we didn't see. We didn't see that. I never saw it. So they said, but these people are the ones that started it. But it got reported that the protesters started the fight.
Right.
And that was never the case.
And that's why I'm glad the Orioles, their operations guy, I'm glad that he said we're closing down the ballpark, because if he saw some of the footage that I saw on TV here, he probably said, okay, see, our fans are too belligerent, because you know at baseball games, they just sit there and drink all day.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting some people who are drunk yelling stuff at people who are protesting something serious, and they laughing at them and throwing stuff at them. They're not going to take that. So I don't care how the media reports it, and that's why I said I was actually kind of proud of them, because the fact is that we can't keep looking at this like it's, you know, the 60s, where we need to restrain ourselves. I'm like, they are going to tear up if you hit them. You're not, because back in the days, white folks would hit you and throw stuff at you. You hit them, they only arrest you. So today, in your fairness, if they're throwing stuff, assaulting black people, they need to arrest both of them. And there was actually this white guy who was in the march. He said some folks came at him, and he was white. He and I don't know who else was with him, but some people came at him. He said that the black folks that was helping him, because he was just a protester with the rest of them, he was being assaulted by the people who were throwing stuff. And he said they just stepped in front of me, right, because they were calling him names from marching with the black folks. So in reporting this, we have to actually say it's not for us to hold up and toe that same line that news services is always told when it came to reporting news concerning black folks. We can't have the same news story that looks like it was the same Rodney King news story, or it was the same news story doing a Tulsa riots. Like, we can't do that no more. We have too many news outlets that we can actually get on and tell the truth. I just want to remind everyone, you're listening to Black on Black Crime. On last week's show, I forgot to do this at the top of the show. On last week's show, we did talk about the Stephen A. Smith and Kerry Champion versus Kerry Champion. There was go check it out in the archives. Black on Black Crime .solarsickers.com. We had that actor Isaiah Washington versus media star Chris Rock and Michael Eric Dyson and Cornel West. I'm scared of this next one. And actor Yaphet Kotto versus Idris Elba. Okay.
I'm not saying it's sweet.
Okay. I had to pause because I didn't want you to say anything. All right, so you
I'm
can
gonna
do
say
it.
I'm not going to bury the sweet of the juice. I'm not going to say it.
You can check it out in the archives. And don't forget to join our Facebook group at Black BOBC Show on Facebook. Now, we have a call on the line. I'm going to bring the call in from Atlanta from 770. I think I know who this is.
7779311.
Uh oh. Hey, what's up, girl? This is the on the program. Hey, girl.
That's my secret crush.
Hi, people. How are you?
Hey, stranger.
How are you?
You're fine. How are you?
I've missed you so. I'm good. I'm an angry black woman now, but I'm good. How y'all doing?
And I'm off curfew, so I'm good.
Yeah,
You
know Vanessa was on curfew. And it wasn't the regular timeout that he normally gets on the show. It wasn't that curfew. This was a new curfew.
This
was
something
I
didn't even do.
Vanessa, are you out there
do.
Throwing things and burning buildings?
No. You ain't going to put this on me this time.
But, you know.
Are we done with the Baltimore thing or no?
We're never going to be done with this, but here's the thing. Just before you get started, I just want to say, Finesse did do his two-minute commentary on the mistresses that couldn't have the guy creeping out in the middle of the night because of the curfew. So we did reach out.
Side chicks.
Oh, I'm sorry. We did reach out for all side chicks to call in if you want to. That's Eric Cole, 909-265.
How did you feel when it was on curfew? All right.
Be nice, Kai.
Side piece is not in season.
Hey,
that's
give me
messed up.
A
curfew.
Side piece of the biscuit.
Side pieces are out of season.
Side pieces are never out of season. This baseball season is when you get your drink
they
on.
They were out of season for a week.
Yeah, they sure
need,
was.
Yeah, they need to go sit down. So go somewhere and sit down.
Hey, wait. So, Finesse, I'm thinking that it was the – the non-side pieces that call for the curfew. They should do that every couple of months, right, guys?
Oh, yeah. Your man was home every night at 10. He was giving you feet massages. Mm-hmm. That's feet massages.
Oh, stuff he's supposed
he
to do.
Cooking you. Kicking you up. Yep, cooking you dinner, help put the kids to bed. You do what you
Y'all might have started something. Y'all might have just started something. That's
curfew
a good
coming
idea.
To your town.
Okay. Right.
Shut it down, Atlanta, DA. Shut it down.
So when you ask for a politician, you want one that's going to give you curfews to help you out.
Yes. 11 o'clock, and that's being nice.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The side pieces want the politician that's not going to have curfew.
Well, you know, side pieces like freaks come out at night. So if you're in the house by 11, side pieces don't have anybody to be on the side and be at peace with. They need to go home and be at peace with themselves.
Okay, see, you know, you guys almost made me jump into this, and I'm going to stop it right there. Because I thought you was going to be the voice of reason, and you're actually helping to make his case. Side pieces meet us all in the chat room. That's all I got to say. We can't have that on the show tomorrow. Side pieces only in the chat room.
I can't believe he ain't choose me.
Here we go. All right, so we are talking about the lifting of the curfew in Baltimore because of the death of Freddie Gray. And six police officers are facing criminal charges over the death, which has been ruled a homicide. They deny wrongdoing. So just for the stats, Gray was arrested on April 12th. He died a week later from injuries. They're saying sustained from the back of the van, but every time I look at that video, I think he was injured before he got there. Sunday morning, Mayor Stephanie Rawlins-Blake said that she didn't want to maintain the curfew any longer than necessary. She said, my goal has always been not to have a curfew in place for a single day longer than it was necessary, is what she wrote on Twitter. She said, I believe we have reached that point today. Vanessa, I'll let you jump in on that later. Maryland's governor said that the state emergency in the city would not be lifted until the last soldier has left. You guys need to get rid of your Republican governor. And charges were announced on Friday by the top prosecutor, Marilyn Mosby, and charges against the officers range from manslaughter to second-degree murder, and there you have it. All right, Kai, that's where we are in the Baltimore.
Oh, so overwhelming.
I just need to recap.
It's just,
yeah.
I mean, it's so, so overwhelming, and it's so sad and unfortunate, and hopefully there are lessons to be learned from both sides. I mean, you know me. I'm a big old pushover. I believe that the police officers were negligent, but I don't believe that this was their intention to kill anybody. But at some point, somebody of those six police officers, and, you know, it was hard for me to grasp what happened. I, like you, agree. I think he was hurt before he went into the van, and I think they knew he was probably hurt. I don't think they knew the degree to which he was injured. But once I saw a reporter actually lay down in the van in that small space and give a demonstration on what could have happened, even when he banged his head slightly, that was just reckless and irresponsible for them not to strap him in. It's six cops. Somewhere in between there, someone should have said, hey, you know what, strap him in. And not, you know, make them be accountable for this man's life. But it's like everyone was so scared to say something to somebody else, no one took responsibility. This man is, you know, rumbling around in the back of a van. That's just tragic. That's just an unnecessary death. But, you know, I heard you guys, and you know, not to make light of that, and it's just got to stop. It's just got to stop happening. But we have to you know, I think we have to take a certain amount of responsibility, too. And I was listening to you guys talk about the mom who was, you know, beating her son and all that. And people were saying she was emasculating him. And, you know, I'm the most nonviolent person in the world and the biggest advocate of kids. But I cannot honestly say that if that was not my son, he wouldn't have got gut punched, head punched, kicked in the butt. because that's my son, and if anybody's going to kill him, I'm going to kill him. I'm not going to leave
right.
him to the police. You know, if she's getting up and going to work every day, you know, sometimes we come across a couple of nephews who, you know, try to buck up at you. All you got to do is show them you're crazy one time. Now, my nephews can tell you, I've never put my hands on them, but I sure snatched them in the collar.
Boy, all right. Now,
you know what I mean? And
no,
they're making the lady sound like she was a monster. I think she reacted on the love of her son, on the emotion of her son. My issue is, why does she have to do that? This is not an attack on black men. I love the men who come out and stand up and mentor in place of the father and the big brother. But where are the fathers and the big brothers? Why does she have to go out there over and over and over again? Why do you have to see the single mom raising her young black man?
Well, first of all, I'm going to throw a flag on you on that because...
Sorry,
this
you might have to throw a couple today.
No. Just because a lot of single black mothers raise their kids and they don't have issues. Like, and we use that as a stereotype for so long that I always try to stop. We have to stop invoking that, like, that even that angry black woman thing is nonsense, right? She had a right to do that with her son. None of us disagree, like we were talking about earlier, is that
she was criminalized and demonized because she took responsibility.
Yeah, people are wrong for that.
For disciplining herself. Yeah, I didn't understand that.
Well, you know, I was at a closed door meeting today, and that question was brought up. That question you brought up, Kai, and I agree totally with what Rome just said. But in a case like this, because people are not wanting to think about it, I do sense and get the question what happened to the men, and that was a big thing around here is because I'm here, so I know who's out there and who's doing what. These same so-called leaders are never on that block of Penn North and North Avenue. Never, ever. It's one of the worst blocks in Baltimore simply because it always has to have police presence. There's so much going on those corners. It's ridiculous. You don't have the big brothers and sister programs. It's amazing to me now. I've been here 7 years working at the press, and I have not once received anything about some kind of mentoring program. I take that back. There was one mentoring program. Since this event, now everybody and their mama got a mentoring program, and I hold you responsible because it's like, okay, well, where were you before? My issue is, what's the contingency plan? We all know what happened, but what's the contingency plan so that it doesn't happen again? What are we going to do? And this is why I'm not fond of these marches, because it doesn't mean anything. And when you keep saying, you know, and that's what we got to get past. It's like, okay, we know that. We know this. What's the plan?
Okay, now here's where
jobs and the economy has to come. I mean, you give kids something to do. But, again, my thing is, why do we have to have a mentoring program? Why can't we have – I'm not man-bashing at all. Y'all know I love my brothers. But I'm saying, why does it have to be – why does another person have to mentor your seed? Why – you know, and I have mentors, so I'm not anti-mentoring, but I'm saying, why do these programs have to be established when the mentors are there, they're just not present? The mentors exist. They could exist. They're just not present. They're somewhere else. Why is another man raising your seed? You don't have to be in
the
house
time,
to hate the mother's guts. You know what I mean? But raise your son to be a man.
Well, at the same time, you know, you have those of us who have to mentor grown folks, right? So I'm sure travels, you talk to girls who already have kids. So if you want to skip generations,
we have
a bad habit of that.
And whose kids have kids?
Right, exactly.
It's generational, you know what I mean?
This is not the problem. The problem is that you do need to get some kind of outrage when I know we can turn this up and start eating ourselves again of saying what it is that we are not doing, but I think that's how supremacy works. And that's how oppression works. If you blame the people who are oppressed, that they're responsible for their own conditions, you let go of all of your responsibility. And so I'm not about to do that. A part of talking about this,
you know,
and a part of...
I'm not even saying that they're responsible for their condition. I think there are some people who have to take responsibility for their situation. Not their condition.
I understand.
But their situation.
I understand.
And even
right.
those kids who were acting up and burning places down, we as their mentors or their elders, you got to snatch them. And I know a lot of kids. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
Okay.
But we have to take responsibility for our own neighborhood.
Right.
When those kids
and
are
so,
acting up like that, you pull them
so
to the side.
So
you know.
Let me throw a flag on you, guy. Let me throw a flag on you now.
I'm going to get a lot today.
Because early on, you know, we talked about this. The fire marshal did come back and say that some of those fires were started from those flash grenades. So the police were firing
right,
those flash grenades indiscriminately. So they started
mm-hmm.
some fires. They dog on selves. So what we're talking about
is
that the reason that this whole thing started is from the useless killing of black folks, which is going on like crazy around this country. And so if we don't keep addressing the fact that there's an attitude towards us, then we can't adjust anybody's behavior to prepare themselves to be killed randomly. We have to really be careful about this. Again, we went through this in the 60s. It was your father that said to me not to, no emphasis on that, because,
right.
you know, I love the family. But he's the one that said in the 60s, I follow Martin. I realize now that Malcolm is right. You guys have to be smarter. We have to be smart. It is not a job to think like those guys did in the 60s. You guys have to be smarter than this. And we're being smarter on this program by saying we're not going to lose focus on what the issue is. We're not pointing the finger at everybody and making blanket statements, but we systemically need to change how we see and view ourselves so that we don't keep attacking ourselves every
time
somebody attacks us.
But you
know
what?
If
we systemically change the way we view ourselves, And don't get me wrong, I'm not attacking us, I'm being realistic. And I live in a city very similar to Baltimore, and I'll be honest with you, my views have changed. I'm frustrated sometimes, but I'm encouraged. I work in an institution of higher learning. I'm encouraged every time I see a young black man or a young brown man walk across the state and get a degree. I don't see that often in the environment in which I work. In fact, it's a graduation this past weekend. I promise you to God, I saw one young man on the whole campus in a graduation gown. And that's between Friday and today. I saw one black man standing in front of the administration building with a graduation gown on. So what I'm saying is, in the environment, Baltimore is not that different from Atlanta. We have to take responsibility for our own actions. And it saddens me because I see the potential. And I see, you know, I see that we're self-destructive sometimes, and I understand why we're so. We're angry. We have a right to be angry. We have a right to want to tear some stuff up. But at some point, we have to grab our kids and not be afraid of our kids. We have to grab our kids by the collar or the coattail or whatever when they're doing wrong and say, listen, you can't do that. We're not going to allow you to do that. And I bet you if that had happened early on, in cases like Baltimore or like St. Louis or whatever, there's a way to do it and to get the message across. Tearing up your own community is not the way to do it. And allowing kids to come in, I saw the footage of them jumping on the police cars and all that. You know, and I can't speak for them. I don't live in Baltimore. They have every right to be angry and protest, but don't be destructive about it. That's what I'm saying, because the whole world is watching.
Okay. Okay, and you know, I normally, you know, I'll back you 1,000, anything that you say, but I understand.
Unless you don't agree.
That part.
You know what I mean?
You're not getting the flag. You're never getting the flag on this program for that, because the problem is that they're, unlike finesse, so everybody knows that I don't really care about whole feminism issues. But technically, your compassion is there for a reason, and raising our kids is a maternal issue, right? I'm not saying that I don't have any estrogen in me. It just might be too much testosterone or whatever that is. But the issue is that we have to see the bigger picture and moving ourselves forward systemically. And I understand what you're saying on the ground level about how we need to handle our kids internally. But the topic today is talking about the Freddie Gray killing and how we get to neutralize the fact that we need to prosecute some officers for killing somebody who should not have been arrested. So since he didn't do anything to be arrested and he was killed in their custody, they are now responsible. Finesse, I'll
let
you know.
And they should be.
I agree with both sides. And my point is that's happening, that process happening. And collectively as, and I look at myself as a leader, I may not be recognized one, and that's another issue we'll do with, but there are a lot of young leaders, I still consider myself young, although I'm 40, I'm still young, who want to help, but you have these other leaders who have another agenda. Okay, fine, you want an agenda, but what's your plan? We got to have a plan. We can't just sit. We need a plan, and if you don't come up with a plan, and there's a group of us that have said, you know what, we're going to move forward. So that's the thing that I would like to see in other cities is if you got to – everyone's a leader. You know, when Rome went and started Sola Syracuse, he didn't ask anybody, you know, do you think this is a good deal or can I get some money, blah, 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 blah. He went and started it. And he thought of the fact that Syracuse needed a black media outlet. So now they have one. So
more importantly, it's a part of this conversation, right? So what happened after 9/11, if you go ever check that URL and when it was bought, after 9/11, I knew that major media was whitewashing what was going on in the world, and I thought that it was necessary that we had some people out there telling the truth. And so I started the media service.
So can I raise my hand on this subject?
Wait, hang on one second.
What inspired you?
We'll let Finesse finish first.
And that's what has to be. So that's my biggest question here on the ground in Baltimore and seeing this and going to these meetings. It's the same rhetoric. It's the same thing as before. You know, they're not Martin Luther King. They're not coming through the door. Malcolm X, Walter Abernathy, Harriet Tubman, or any of those. We have to come up with a plan to execute. We need to be more supportive. And that's what I'm hearing from a lot of the people who don't like the things that our political leaders, our governmental leaders, and our black leaders are saying. They say, you know, this Finesse, this is what we're looking for. This is what we need. So I say that because the situation happened. It's over and done with. You know, it is what it is. But now what are we doing next? Like you, Ron.
Exactly.
You say, okay, I'm going to do this. So what are we going to do?
We've heard all the, you know, and it is my prayer that so much change comes about, just not in Baltimore, but just in every city. For every human right, every life that matters, that change comes about, and that Freddie Gray didn't die in vain, and that Eric Garner didn't die in vain, and Trayvon Martin, you know, that all of those young men didn't die in vain. So it's like you said, Finesse, what now? What do we do now? What is our game plan? So when you're talking about Rome, you know, Rome, you didn't like what the media was putting out there, so you put some stuff out there yourself. You took it upon yourself to change what we are seeing in the media. Who or what planted the seed in you to make you want to do that change? That's my point, that we got to grab our young people. And I was so very proud, I promise you, to see all those young people out there, black, white, Latino, Asian, standing up, protesting, laying down for change. My question is like y'all said, the young man said that, you know, older people don't understand us, don't get us. What do we do to get a result of someone like a Rome or someone like a Finesse or someone like Kai is going to be when she grows up? You know, who plants that seed to make you want to do better? We got to do that. We got to show the beauty. We got to show the beauty in our own kids before we expect them, because they don't see it in themselves now. They don't see the beauty and the potential that they have.
Mainly it's the seed of discontent, though, and that's why I'm saying we can't stifle that. I mean, that was stifled in us. That raw energy, I can tell you why you know, Low-Key's not on the program. I wish she was here today. But I can tell you why Low-Key was the president of our school. Early on, early rap, early hip-hop, you know, we at our school dances, we had bands, right? And so
right.
we were, Low-Key and I were at the park, and I said to him, look, we need to have our boy Dre DJ for the school dance. And he was like, yeah, you know, we need to do this. And so we had to get on committees to do it. And I said, no, the student government president decided where the funds go because he wanted to run for our class president. And I said, no, we're going to run there. So he and I, through our whole senior year in high school, joined every organization, superintendent, cadet, student government. We did that to change that. And we not that we told anybody, but that was just what we decided
right.
in the moment
exactly.
to do that. And so,
exactly.
so all I'm saying, though, if we would have talked to the leaders at the NAACP, they were like, well, we need to go down to talk to your principal. We pretty much strong-armed
right.
them.
But
so,
you strong-armed it because
saying,
somewhere in you, you saw the power and the potential, and you knew who you were. You knew the power you had. How do we reach our children to let them know that they have that same potential, that they, you know, that they have that same power, that same beauty, that same talent? You know, I guess that's the frustrating part to me. How do
right,
we tap
me,
into that
in.
Talent to get them to be leaders? And not followers.
It's a different generation of kids and what they see and go through. We had support. If you came up with the idea, your mother, father, whether it's a single parent home or two family home, they said, well, if that's something you truly believe, make sure you think that through. They pay devil's advocate. When
so
I
why
talk
do you
to
think
these
that's
kids,
not now?
And I talked to these kids. I was on the street and talked to kids. I had to talk to at least 300. The main problem they're saying is that adults are not listening.
Exactly.
They have no out. They have no outlets. And that is, you know, again, we need to address that. I've listened to these kids. I've talked to them, and I've heard what they said, and I feel them. You know, we have to listen to them, you know, and encourage them. And that's the other thing. There was a couple of feelings
right.
that I don't feel like I'm loved or encouraged. And that's a tough thing to hear as an adult. And you're looking at this beautiful child who's getting good grades,
exactly.
but she has
it's heartbreaking.
Doubts about herself. Right.
And
so
not
that's
only
part
are
adults like,
not listening, they're not present. They're so wrapped
right.
up in what they're doing. It's sad. I'm telling you, it's a sad. I pray for anybody raising children in this generation. On the opposite
and that's
side
my
of that, so many potential. It's so much potential. But I pray for anyone who has to raise their child in this generation.
I am hopeful. We have more Black females in college than of any other demographic, white female, white male, what by percentage, Black females.
Right.
We have higher graduation rates. We have lower crime rates than we had in the last 15 to 20 years in the Black community. We have done so much better that I don't define myself by negative, and I suggest to everybody to always look forward because people are getting smarter. And once we start acknowledging how smart we get, we have to realize that a part of wisdom, a part of being smart, is your discontent to not have somebody lie to you as much. So there's going to be a lot more
right.
angst in the world. There's going to be a lot more contradiction. Like, if you get a chance to see this, I should have posted, Jon Stewart did an interview with a New York Times reporter who lied about the whole Iraq war buildup, right? She stuck to that lie mm-hmm. because she was being fed by the Bush administration. So she has a new book out to define the run-up to the war. Jon Stewart would not let her off the hook. He did not smile, did not crack no jokes. He said, that's wrong, you're lying. He did the best job on a comedy show, better than 60 Minutes has done. There is not a news show that's ever grilled those folks about lying to the American people and making them feel some kind of way and pointing a finger. So when we look at stuff like Iraq or now Iran, we're letting the same people who lied to you before lie to you about that. We watch people say
mm-hmm.
things like Arab Spring, they need to rise up and be heard. And then we tell Libya to do that. And then we tell everybody else. But every time people in the communities rise up to say something is wrong in this piece, we say be quiet and stop burning up your own community. But we encourage that in other countries. We tell them to do that all the
right.
time. So all I'm saying to
right.
you is that as media, we have to not feel we are pigeonholed because it's going to make somebody, Caucasians, upset about what it is that we're saying. Because you're lying to yourself if you think that they are not just picking a side and pointing a finger at somebody.
And that's the problem when it comes to black media. We have been absent. Right, and we've been doing it for 30 years, three decades of not really addressing things that should be addressed, not being the kind of volunteers that we need to be, and now, you know, like Malcolm X says, it come home to roost. We really, you know, and we have to figure and fix it. And I want to say one other thing, because you brought up Jon Stewart. I want to bring up D.L. Hughley, who was on Bill's Bar show on this past weekend. Brother D.L. Hughley, you just made me love you all over again, because he laid it down as to why this is that, and then the one guy tried to use some other situation to talk about Baltimore. He was like, nah, we're not going to do that, because we don't question you on the stupid stuff that you do. But he laid it out, and what he was saying is the truth.
And he
what's the plan and what's the solution? We need to look at ourselves, and we need to fix it, and we can't do it alone. And he said that, and I was just like, wow. And this is the most, and as he's gone along, because he wants to be in that political field of comedian and addressing the issues, he's gotten so much better from when he had his first show on CNN to how he does shows now. He basically just took over Bill Maher's show.
Right.
Yeah, he did.
And I was so happy.
Eloquently. And so can I ask a question now? As a black person who's been a woman all of my life, or most of it, so you just shared the statistics that young black women are graduating at a rate higher than ever before. That does my heart proud. But just imagine, and maybe because I'll never be satisfied until I know we have at least come close to where we have the potential to be. If young black women are graduating at a rate higher than ever before, imagine what it would be like if young black men were graduating at a level higher than ever before.
Well, technically we are. That's just bullshit.
Yes, we are.
Bull stuff that people throw out there.
Okay,
there more
so
black,
even
as a matter
if we are.
There's more
even
black men going to college than women.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's just say, because I don't see it. Where I'm at, I don't see it. And I'm in one of the chocolatest cities in the country. Where I'm at, I don't see it. So let's just say those facts are true.
Okay,
so for
Ty, you can't do that.
I'm saying news
too much. They,
no,
right.
listen, I'm just telling you
the census numbers, that's what they're telling us.
Right. If you're giving me the census numbers, and I'm saying, let's take away the census and let's say for our own research, those numbers are true, that young black men are entering college higher than ever before. I agree with that. I don't have a problem with that. But just imagine at whatever level they are now, if we increase that by 5 or 10, even if they don't graduate, for them to enter college, to have that experience, how do we get to the point? Because it's like I said, for me, this is personal. I grew up around people like y'all. So this is a new environment for me. I grew up around, you know, business owners and IT men and radio personalities. So this is a whole new realm for me. Where I'm at now, it hurts my heart to have to go to work every day and see less than a percent of a percent of a percent of people who look like me walking across the stage. So my question is, even if we're at the highest level of where young black men are now, how do we get to a level higher than that? Because what I'm passing on the street to get to where I'm going to work, I see way more. And it's like you said, we have to change it systemically. But what I see going down the street every single day, going to and from work, is I can promise you 100 times percentage-wise, I see more outside of the institution than I do inside. So imagine what that must be like for me. Working, going to an institution and seeing something that no representation of me whatsoever.
Right. And so,
my question is always, how do we get them off the street and into the classroom?
Well, again,
what do we do?
You can look at some of the things that even the president is doing with the My Brother's Keeper initiative and some of the funding that they gave to HBCUs from people being systemically locked out of traditional colleges and what they're trying to do with community college, right? We're still dealing with bad policies from the 80s and the 90s. They're children
right.
of those policies. And so just
right.
like
right.
Kwame, oh, I don't know if you saw this, Finesse, that former Baltimore congressman Kwesi Mfume, who was the NAACP national chapter president, and he was a head of the Congressional Black Caucus, when they were asking him about Hillary Clinton's talking about changing the policies on incarceration, she said she should know her husband created them. Him and Newt Gingrich,
right.
when they were in Congress, increased 16 more categories for prosecution for the death penalty. They added more policemen on the street. That whole three strike stuff came in there, and that was all that whole policing and just locking them up and zero tolerance came out of those guys as they were coming out of the Reagan era of that zero tolerance stuff. So they
mm-hmm.
are part of the problem that we have to deconstruct our laws because now we have
right.
a bunch of incarcerated children and their families. Like, those are systemic problems, and now we have to figure out how to educate.
Right.
right. We have to educate backwards generationally now. And that
right.
is a part
right.
of the bigger problem because we can't solve anything until we say, like you said, you know, again, this is a maternal issue, is that you want to bring all your children back in the fold. And what I'm saying to you is that we have people progressing anyway, despite the bad food, the trying to kill us off doing slavery in the Middle Passages. We are here living proof that there are smart black people. Like, there's a lot of us. And we can't be defined, mm-hmm. like when people say there are some good policemen, all of them are not bad. All the black people aren't bad either. That's a small percentage to the bigger picture, to the bigger pie.
Right.
And we need to keep focused on that.
I've been around Wes Monroe, who's actually from Baltimore, still resides here. He was on Meet the Press this weekend. And he and I had a conversation, and I heard him when he talked to some students a couple weeks ago. He said a lot of you want to have initials in front of your name, doctor this or reverend that. It doesn't mean anything because overall your job is to make sure you take care of the community. We all have that responsibility. And he said, well, a lot of people are forgetting. He said, you can't wait for people to come to you. You have to go to them. So that means finding if these colleges and campuses, if it's too far away, how come we can't have a courses offered at a church? It's done in other areas. You pastors and ministers always talk about somebody coming to your church. People don't believe in that system or believe in you. So why can't
you take
off the collar and come to where they're at? And that's where we have to do. You want people to come to you, but you have the means and the capabilities. So why can't you meet these people? And I thought that was brilliant when he said it. He's a guy to watch out for. And he's going to represent black folks, especially, you know, you mentioned it earlier, Rome, this new era, these young people, you know, Wes is, I think 35, maybe 39. But
yes.
he talks about, and he uses his brother, he uses an example of his brother in prison, which a lot of our leaders don't talk about their past. So if you don't talk about your past, how can you relate to somebody and you want to move forward in the future? One of the things I could tell you being in here in Baltimore, these leaders still think it's about the shout. No.
Well,
we want
okay.
you to talk.
Can't throw you.
Jesus talk. No, you can't throw
okay,
me a flag.
Don't make me throw your flag on that one.
You can't because I'm just telling you about
nothing.
The experience. I'm telling you about the experience and what the people come back and say. They're not hearing mm-hmm. that. You have to talk to them and communicate. And you're not talking
right.
and communicate, so they're not hearing you.
And, you know, I'm just saying in defense of the church, I'd rather for church to be church. But you do have these nice facilities in a lot of cases where you can't hold class. So they need to move with the times and talk to people. But I love black folks in black church. That is kind of my thing.
I do too,
but
Rome. Amen.
I have appreciation for that beyond belief because no matter how educated you become. No, I'm just saying no matter how educated you are, the only place that you get your spirituality is being – is in the singing and the shouting inside your church. Like, spiritually, we need that.
And the teaching. The teaching and the learning.
But we're not talking about church. We're not talking about.
Okay, but
we're talking about.
But you know
we're
what?
Talking about effectively. Talking about effectively reaching people, and they don't hear that screaming and yelling.
You mentioned Vanessa. You know, coming to the people, or the people coming to you. You know, reaching out to the community. That was the other thing, and I know you both can relate to this too. The other sad and disheartening thing about where I'm at is there are scholarships designed for minorities. There's more scholarships available than minorities available to take them. And so all this money is sitting out there, and it's not being used, and it's not being taken advantage of. And that's the frustrating part, I guess, too, because, you know, there's opportunity there, but in defense of the people in the community, how do you know to go to the scholarship if you don't know the scholarship exists?
That's right. And to Vanessa's point is that the churches
right.
need to take a – they can.
The
I'm
churches,
not saying that
the
they need
colleges,
to do anything. They
the,
can
right.
take a bigger responsibility to interacting with the kids.
Right. And so can the colleges, to a point. But sometimes you got to read the writing on the wall because
right.
there's all this money here. And it's just a sad situation. It really is. There's millions of dollars available, and there's not. They got to go out and find, like, a needle in a haystack, find people to give this money away to.
You mentioned about
mm-hmm.
the colleges doing more. 6 years ago, no, it was 8 years ago, when I was still in Daytona Beach, and Daytona Beach Community College went to a certain HBCU and said, hey, look, why don't we offer our two-year program to your college? And this was going around. There was not only that, there was a few other two-year colleges that went to certain HBCUs and said, hey, we can offer a two-year program through your school, you know, blase, blase. Instead of looking at that as this was the wave of the future, there was too many egos caught up in it, and hey, how dare you? I can't believe you did this. Now, those two-year school programs have hooked up with other colleges to offer their programs. And now we're starting to see more HBCUs closing. So we do, and that's another thing that needs to be addressed. We have to figure out how can we get students to enroll into our schools. And,
right.
and you know, not moving with the times, because that right there, and I covered it, that was in the starting to be the nail in the coffin to a lot of HBCUs because they wouldn't offer a two-year program. You have to move ahead with the times. Some of them still don't offer online classes. You got to go meet the people where they're at.
Right. That's true.
And that's where those technical grants come in. I just want to remind everyone, you listen to a special Black on Black Crime. We're talking about the Freddie Gray killing in Baltimore, and they left their overnight curfew, so Vanessa's a little happy today, and just some things that's going on in the community. Later, we're going to talk about Floyd Mayweather beating Pacquiao, but we'll talk about that a little later. Now, I just want to say if anyone wants to come in, first of all, I want to welcome everyone onto the show. Those who are on the line, if you want to hit one and come on, that's fine. I know the commission's there. She's a little busy, but she's been here for a while watching you two for flags because I know you guys earned them. So since our commissioner is a minister, we can't really – she's probably opting out of cussing out today. So we're going to give her a moment. And but for those in the chat, if you want to comment in the chat, I'll mention those as well. So I just want to remind you, listen to Black on Black Crime. The thing about considering what kind of opportunities are out there and all of those things on the back of this, I just want to keep focus on the fact that, you know, we keep forgetting about the kid who was at Pace University, and he was killed by the policeman. Policeman jumped on the car and then said he hit him, but the passenger couldn't testify because whatever, and they killed that guy. And then we have the situation of, obviously, Ferguson and all of these other cases that keep happening, and I don't know if you guys know, but we have a new case. Four African-American parole officers got pulled over, had guns drawn on them in a town outside of New York City. They are now suing because they were detained even though the police ran their license plate, saw that they had a state car. They still put guns on them and held them on them because they said somebody reported that they saw black people riding around with bulletproof vests. So they're now
suing. And those
suing.
Are our classmates. Those are our classmates,
yeah.
And we know those people. So imagine all of those stories that go untold. Imagine what happened before the cell phone. All those stories that we don't know about. If these are the ones that we do, we know the character of those, of at least one of those people who were pulled over. So we already know, like in the case of Johnny Damage, that's a flat out lie. You know?
Right.
But,
right, and so that's,
you know,
that's kind of what disgusts me. You know, in the Johnny Gammons case, too, like, we didn't forget Johnny. We're never going to forget Johnny. But the fact is that everybody forgot the police officers who killed them. They forgot their names.
Exactly.
But we are here not to let you forget that, that he was killed.
Exactly.
So
he was murdered.
There was no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And we need politicians. Don't come talking to youth about leadership when you're not providing any leadership. And I think that's the problem.
Right.
Everybody can't negotiate themselves out of a wet paper bag. So if that's what you do, respect your elders. You don't have to yell at them. But do not go back and negotiate the freedom of everybody else when you've been enslaved and don't want to get out of it. Because I always say that there are black people, when Harriet Tubman came around, was like, why is she coming around here? We had it good around here.
Mm-hmm.
Massive cool people. So we don't look at life like that, but some people want to be in certain conditions, especially if their title is leadership of black people. That could be their only title that they actually have. So it's hard for them to give it up.
And I've learned that just because you're in a leadership role does not qualify you as a leader.
I've been saying the last 2 weeks down here in Baltimore.
Yeah, so here's why I'm proud even of Marilyn Mosby. She's 35 is what they're reporting. Sorry to say your name. But you take her even in her leadership, and she said we, right? She knows how the law works. She knows the fact that we can debate this all we want to, but if you unnecessarily detain someone, everything that happens after, you're responsible for. So everybody can say he hit his head in the van. They had no reason to reasonably hold him. So since you didn't, OJ is in jail right now because went to – No, don't get frustrated with this, because regardless on if we think he killed somebody or not, that man went to retrieve some stolen items that somebody stole from him. And he was standing in front of a door, and they convicted him of kidnapping. He said since he was blocking the door, you didn't allow him to leave. So you arrested somebody, so you technically kidnapped him.
Right. He got arrested for standing, basically.
Right.
For standing somewhere.
So I don't want it to be like this double standard where we have this high threshold of you shouldn't run from the police if you didn't do anything. Please. The fact is everybody knows that if you are anywhere near the police when they're swarming like that, people get away from them because technically you can't win with your word against theirs. Even when they're killing people, you can't win. So we need to be conscious about it.
Even when it's being filmed.
Exactly. If you're being filmed and you still go, well, y'all not seeing the bigger picture, your eyes is not telling you the truth, there's a big problem.
Uh-huh.
And I want to remind you of this, Kai, because we all have a lot of expertise amongst us. When I watch news now, I can't even watch politics. And you know how long I've been doing political stuff. I can't watch it because I realize that the nuts that's on MSNBC, on ABC, on NBC, they watered it down so much that they actually are trying to convince us of something that doesn't even exist. Like they're like, Hillary's going to be next president. It's because they're all selling you the same thing without actually letting you have any kind of critical thinking. And then you put nuts on the – I'm about to commit a black-on-black crime. This is for Finesse. I just want to shout out Finesse on this one. You take the kid and his mother who's on The View, and you have an idiot like Raven Simone say something to that little kid like this. Here's what she said.
What does she do now? Oh, Lord.
She said, how does it feel to get your ass whooped on national TV? That was her question to him on The View.
Is that what she said?
I watched it.
First of all,
she said that.
First of all, why is she on The View?
I watched her say that.
Wait a minute, can I bring up something about Raven Simone? And let me tell you how media works, and it's pissing me off. What was the other comedian?
Cheryl Underwood.
Oh, you're talking about who was on the talk?
No, not Cheryl Underwood. On the Fox. I mean, on.
Oh, Sherry Shepherd.
What was her name? Sherry Shepherd.
Sherry Shepherd. Yes.
The one thing I didn't like about Sherry Shepherd was I know Sherry Shepherd is smart, but she said a lot of things that were dumb and stupid. They loved her on The View. They are in the process, I guess, of going to hire Raven Simone to take Sherry Shepherd's place. Because why?
Because she's a good replacement.
As silly. She's a good replacement because she comes off and saying some dumb stuff. And how they think Black America, again, is how they think Black America should be. She doesn't talk, you know, oh, I'm not really black, which is the kind of stuff that black folks, I mean, not black folks, white folks say, why are we talking about racism? It doesn't exist. Let's move on. We've had a black president, you know.
Right.
She thinks a lot of things. It's just blown out of proportion and all this and that. And then she says comments like this.
Yeah. I used to feel sorry for her because I think she's just a lost soul. She was trying to be funny. But you have a – I don't know how old that kid is.
He's 16. I think he's 16.
16.
So at 16, you have this young man with his mother in front of him, and I'm surprised that his mother said, hey, hey, don't talk to my child like that, because she was trying to be humble.
Now, that's who should have got a beat down.
Right.
She should have gave Simone a beat down.
They don't realize what the black woman was saying about why she was why she was going out to grab her kid. She was hitting him because that's her emotion. She was upset.
Exactly.
But what they're not getting is that if a policeman put their hands on her son, she would have did that to the policeman.
Exactly. And that's not funny. That's not a joke. You know, that,
no way
that
right.
wasn't
that
for anyone to see. And for her, I try, you know, every time I see Raven Simone talking now, first of all, I didn't know she was on The View full time. Why?
They're looking
but,
to hire her full time.
Oh, no. Yeah. Ever since I saw that, I just turn the TV down when she's around. But she's
think
doing
when
way too much.
I think once they do, Whoopi's going to leave, and that show will be canceled.
It should be. I mean, how
it's a needed vehicle because Whoopi brings a lot of intelligent and thought and realness to the show. But if you're going to hire people that are going to be buffoonish and ignorant and a person of color, it ain't going to work.
Yeah.
And I don't blame her for leaving.
I don't either.
Yeah, I didn't want to hit the Uncle Ruckus Watts intro for Raven Simone. But we did have a Uncle Ruckus Watts moment on the show. I just wanted to let you know it didn't go away. But Raven Simone, our honorary. Oh, wait a minute. Why we have Kai here? Maybe we should trade her, Finesse.
I just think we need to just delete her. We need to drop her like they do in the NFL. Just drop her.
No. We need to secure. We need to secure a draft pick. You know,
well,
I'm going to say.
I want to see who you're talking about.
Put it this way. Next show, Raven Simone's on the block. So I'm going to let everybody come back with their own picks.
We'll put her in the timeout corner.
No, she just dropped mine. I'll pick up a rookie. I'll just drop her for my life.
You want a new rookie? Finesse is going to vote for a newborn. We're just going to take any newborn.
Great.
We're going to give them time to grow up.
I'm telling you, my goodness.
Okay, so how about we do this? We're going to put a call out. The next baby born in the next 5 minutes, just send us a text. They got an honorary. We're trading them for Raven Simone. We just wanted to kind of wrap up that, and I want to go to the Manny Pacquiao Floyd Mayweather fight. Now, this is going to be Kai, but here Kai, because I want you to know that you can be a part of this, because I didn't watch the fight. I'm not a big boxing fan personally. So
thank God I had a media link.
Okay, so let me just go through the numbers. Floyd Mayweather, he won the WBO welterweight title. He has the WBC and the WBA that he already has. He won the fight 118-110 by one judge, 116-112 another, 116-112 by the other judge. So he's won in 5 weight world championship classes now, so 48-0 and stretching 19 years. Now, estimated revenue for this weekend's fight, $400 million. Mayweather-Pacquiao is splitting about $230 million. Tickets for the fight went for as much as $350,000. And people were charged about $100 to watch it on TV. That's what the cable rates were.
If you paid that money to see a show, some entertainment, $100, something wrong with you.
I wouldn't have gone to see it if someone had given me a ticket.
Well, well.
Not a, I respect his craft, but I don't respect the man. He needs to be humbled, and it was my prayer that he got knocked out in the second round. You know, he didn't make a comeback.
Oh, man, that is hate.
But it was my prayer.
Ugh.
No, I mean, he's just too much for me. You know, just so now we get it. You're good. You can fight. First of all, I could probably beat him. I outweigh him by 200 pounds. But,
yeah,
you know,
he's a little fella.
He's a tiny fella. But, you know, humble yourself. And shame on the people who paid $300,000 and $400,000 for a ticket that employs 100 people at $40,000 or whatever the math is in that. You could have employed some people for what you paid for that ticket for a year, several people. I don't get it.
First of all,
I mean, you like what you like. You should be able to spend your money the way you want. But seriously, if someone had given me a ticket, no hate on Floyd Mayweather. I respect his training. I respect it. You know, I respect the athlete. But I would have gave it to him. No, I wouldn't even gave it away. I probably would have threw it away. Sorry. I'm angry today.
There's some hate on the program. Okay, back to Finesse, who has a little less hate than Kai today.
I'm sorry.
I bet you the way Denzel was trending, he would have went better looking. How about you that?
Okay. Now, let's go through our internet comments because these two are just killing me. Now, so here's one of the comments just said that Manny is a great ambassador, Floyd a great business boxer. Years ago, fighters were managed and left dead, boxers beat up to a pulp, and then came along the genius, Floyd. No longer does a boxer have to suffer or die. Just manage their money, and you can get what you can. So they said that it's a brain-damaged sport. The more dangerous, the more interesting. And Floyd spun it and made millions, and the person said they're very clever. Now, this one came from the BBC, so that's Britain watching the fight. Now, another person said that as much as I wanted Pacquiao to win, Mayweather outclassed him in 10 rounds. I think he ought to give Khan a rematch, whoever that is. And the last comment just said, I thought the fight was great, seeing a true master of the ring. Floyd totally neutralized Pacquiao's strength by hitting him and moving. It's all tactics. As for Pacquiao's injury, he didn't have to fight injured, and he could have postponed the fight until he was 100%, but he didn't. On the back end, Pacquiao saying that he was a little hurt now, but I think $100 million makes him feel a little better. That's just me.
What makes a fight worth $100 million? I don't get it.
Because people will pay.
This is the fight that everybody been wanting to see. So
what's the difference in that fight? What's the difference in that fight and going outside your neighborhood with Ray Ray and the Johnsons and watching them fight? What's the difference?
Okay.
Because that fight is over with in 3 minutes, and you don't get no next round.
You don't get no popcorn. Here's where both of y'all are hating. Here's what I say about professional athletics. I just want to tell you this. I would rather see the boxers get the money than people selling them and letting them fight and giving them scraps. So if that is generating $100 million.
Don King.
No, don't get on Don King now. Because you know the
first
time.
Yes, I can. He stole Mike Tyson's money.
No.
He stole a lot
of
boxers' money.
Well,
yes, he did.
Well, he managed them. He was double dipping. Okay, I can give you the double dipping part. But here's the thing. He never made $30 million in one fight while he was boxing for all those other promoters. Never. So Don got him a lot more money. But Don can't be managing him and then spending the money that he gave him. Like, okay, you're right. Double dipping, shouldn't have did that. But at the same time, Mike was getting ripped off for a long time.
But listen, I agree with everything from a business standpoint. Floyd Mayweather got it down pat. Manage yourself. Make sure you get your money. Work out your own contracts. Get yourself a good lawyer.
Yeah,
I agree. I love what Ray Allen said. You know what?
Stop acting like a girl.
That's another issue. I'll let you have that.
And y'all can tell him I said
I love
that.
Ray
you
Allen.
You can't beat me.
And I love Ray Allen for taking control of his contracts and his money. That's what I've been preaching that for years. Everybody should be independent. Once you learn it, be independent. You're looking for a record deal. For what? You can do more than what the record label could do for you all they are as a bank. Don't get me on my high horse this morning.
Well, okay, but if you tune into the new show, I'm going to tell the story because I just want to tell you money doesn't make you a good human being. There was a casino owner. He's a part of a consortium that has a $420 million bid on a casino in the Catskills. That guy sexually assaulted his sister. He's over 50. She's in her high 40s. They're both married. She has three kids. He has two. Got drunk, and he said it was consensual. He pleaded guilty. This is in the paper now.
He pleaded guilty.
Did
what now?
He sexually assaulted his sister.
Okay.
He ripped off her pajamas and what? He sexually assaulted her. So this guy stepped down as CEO, and they reinstated him, and they have a $420 million bid to build a casino in the Catskills. It's called the Neville Grand Resort. It's also a casino in Jersey that they already have. So when you start talking about human beings and how people are coming from the bottom doing that, I say incest and all that craziness that we should be concerning ourselves with is not coming from somebody not having home training. Who does that?
Oh, no.
But I'm just saying, I know you curse out one way or another, but I don't want to jump on Floyd Mayweather because I keep feeling like Floyd Mayweather does something. He needs to have his butt in jail, and they should take him to jail. But nothing makes you a good human being unless you are a good human being. Nothing makes you that way.
Right.
Money doesn't do that.
I have the utmost respect for the little guy. So I'm just joking, Floyd. If I see you in person, I'm
hey, I'm a little guy.
He is a little guy.
What are you doing?
I'm having the utmost respect for his training and his work ethic and all that. I just wish he would stop talking for just a minute and listen.
Let me do a couple of quick news stories before we get out of here. I just want to say that, you know, they're making a Barbershop 3 finesse.
Mm-hmm.
Nicki Minaj, Regina
Hall,
Eve.
Yeah, I heard Nicki Minaj was going to be in it. Thank goodness I get a movie pass.
Say that again?
Nicki Minaj is going to be in it?
Yes. Malcolm Lee is attached to direct it. It's penned by Blackish creator Kenya Burrows and Tracy Oliver. Do you know collectively the other two movies grossed $140 million domestically? So they were low-budget movies, so they were a big financial success to the studios.
You know, if you can get $400,000 for making a film, which everybody took a cut, and then you get on the back end 1 or 2%, that's what you should do. But, you know,
right.
A lot of these stars want $20 million. You ain't Will Smith, and even Will Smith took pay cuts.
Right, even to get his own films made. I mean, they're producing movies now, so... You take
that's
a pay cut to get
about.
It on the back
that's
end.
That's that humbling I'm talking about. You know, sometimes you got to do that, you know?
Uh-huh. See,
you
there
know.
You go. See, we bring up Will Smith's cartoon changes. She's a lot softer
that's
than that.
Right. That's right. And go say it's Elba. But, you know, we don't need to see your money laying all over the bed.
Yeah, but it'll just ain't seen it before.
Okay, we're not going to have all this hate on the program today. Now, Taraji P. Henson. My baby mama right there. She was talking with the BBC earlier. Now, get this. Empire had been illegally downloaded more than 250,000 times per episode in the UK before they even ran it. Taraji went to Twitter and said, thank you for illegally downloading it because they didn't know anything about Empire until they saw all these downloads. So the international buyer for the channel E4 in the UK, they went and purchased the show. It's put on, they said that this show put on an 82% of audience between episode one and the final finale. So here's what that means. Empire is the first U.S. TV show in three decades to see a rise in viewership of its first five episodes to more than 23 million people who watched the season finale. Now, only 17 million watched it here. 23 million watched it there. So Taraji said, thank you, because they wouldn't know anything about Empire unless y'all illegally downloaded it.
That shows you the interest of black culture. Authentic.
Right, exactly.
Because this is a show, if you're in the music business, entertainment business, you watching that show and you're like, yo, is this my life? So many people are trying to sue because they think it's them. And this is why the stuff that they're pushing on the radio and entertainment here in America ain't working. Because people want authentic black culture, not early.
Right, they don't want the watered-down version. And that's why I said earlier, is that if white folks can assimilate black people, not use black people, they would. They just can't. Right.
Right.
People gobble up black folks' culture when black people step out.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
The world
yep.
is watching. And we got to be
yep.
careful not to let just any and everybody write our story, you know, because it's
oh,
our story. We, you know,
that's
but the
true.
World is watching. The world is
right.
definitely watching.
Now, Michael Jai White and Tyson Baffert, Robert
what?
Richards,
what?
And Eric,
what?
I know this is for Kai, Jean-Claude,
thank you.
Somebody, they're doing Chocolate City. It's the black version of Magic Mike that's going to be released on May 22nd in the theaters
and, yes,
and
I'll be
iTunes
there.
On the same day. I see, Vanessa, I had to save that till last because I didn't know how Kai was going to act. And lucky, Kamish fell off. Or she fell out. I can't remember. I can't tell which one because she is now
she
not on the line.
She couldn't hear me because of that spring, that Sprint stuff. Don't believe they're going to give you half off your bill. That's why you get
that's
half that said. Service, commission.
They said just bring your bill in. They'll help you out. Huh? Didn't
see,
work?
That's what happened. So commission can blame them. She couldn't hear me say nothing I said today.
Oh, no. All right.
Well, I appreciate you saving that for last. I think I speak for all the women who are breathing and living when we say we appreciate it.